administrators, folks who are dealing one-on-one with students in a whole variety of different capacities that are things around financial aid or tutoring or basically any aspect of the student's experience that's not in the classroom.
Hi, and welcome to the Student Success Higher Ed Podcast. I'm Graham Tracy.
And I'm Jan Day.
Let's get started.
Graham, I wanted to take a moment, actually a few moments, to sit down with you and talk about a new article that I found on Inside Higher Ed this week. It's by Stephen Mintz. I guess it's a blog post by Stephen Mintz, who is a senior advisor to the president of Hunter College for Student Success and Strategic Initiatives. And I thoroughly enjoyed and agreed with much of what Stephen Mintz says in his post, How to Help Academically Struggling Students. And I know this is something we've talked about quite a bit over the past couple of years about when we're talking about interventions on campus and when our consulting team goes out to talk to faculty members and others on campus. But let me quickly touch on the four recommendations that Mintz suggests.
Right, right. So you're going to go through them quickly, and then we'll discuss them. Okay, great. Yeah.
So he recommends that there are four things that need to happen to motivate struggling students and improve their outcomes. First, integrate study skills training into the academic experience. Second, work on students' mindset. Third, recognize the importance of faculty. And fourth, realize that course design can make a big difference. So those are the four areas. Let's dive in to each of those.
So we have two that are focused around students, right? And then two that are faculty centric.
Yep. Right. And in fact, one of the things that caught my eye about this was that there was a faculty-centric aspect to this, because so often in my experience when we're talking with different institutions, most of the conversations that I end up having are with non-instructional staff.
Right.
So your administrators, folks who are dealing one-on-one with students in a whole variety of different capacities that are things around financial aid or tutoring or basically any aspect of the student's experience that's not in the classroom.
That's a good point, because they essentially work around that, even though there's a lot of impact in the classroom, obviously. And I think everybody knows that intuitively.
But everyone's very wary. But they're wary of it. There. So I know I'm jumping ahead there.
So this is good.
First one, integrate study skills training into the academic experience.
Ah, so what does it say here in terms of study skill courses? Not many people are using them.
So I think when I speak with schools, institutions, they're often like, yeah, we got that study skills thing figured out. That's the first year experience class that we teach. Mm-hmm. And what Mintz is suggesting is that's not enough. A standalone course or a module within a first year experience course isn't enough to really make an impact. He says that the study skills need to be embedded in all of the classes, especially in that first year across Gen Ed, because those are the kinds of skills that need to be reinforced again and again and again in context.
Right. Too often the study skills course is embedded in a first year experience course, which has many other priorities that it's trying to push forward and everything, and so you don't really get enough study skills.
Exactly.
And not in context.
Yeah. Because I know the first time I learned the importance of how to use a spreadsheet, it was in an artificial context that really only made sense to me much later when I had to use it for an assignment. And so, anyway, context matters.
Mm-hmm.
Second, work on students' mindset.
Yeah, so this one is coming from the perspective of where he says, let students know that going to a learning center does not mean that you're dumb.
Mm-hmm.
So the assumption being that that's one of the barriers for students, right? That they feel maybe stigmatized when they're going to.
Yeah, he makes a point here that it's almost like that idea of grit and stick-to-itiveness can actually backfire, where if a student has sort of powered through, that's been their the tool in their toolkit, like, okay, I don't understand what's happening, but I'm going to power through because I'm not a quitter, that can actually backfire, because then they don't take advantage
of these tools. One, too, that is close to my heart in terms of my two children that are in college, one of whom is now going through the exam period, and she's working on trying to get papers done while also studying for tests, and, you know, is starting to feel the heat and the stress. And I feel like had she been either first going to some study skills classes earlier, right, to the earlier point, but then also just realizing that she could go to these services periodically and not necessarily having to, you know, wait till the last minute when there's no time to go and take advantage of the service. So it's not even, I don't even think she has the mentality that, well, oh, it seems like only the dumb people go to the, go to this learning center or what have you, but it's more from the standpoint of, okay, now I do need some help, but I don't actually have the time to get it because I've got too many competing priorities at the moment. So somehow I'm trying to think of, like, how to weave this into the daily mindset of the student, that these are services that should be used in an ongoing manner.
It's almost like going to the gym.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if you're going to be in a wedding on Saturday.
Yeah.
Friday night is not the time to start the workout program.
Right, and lose my 10 pounds.
And lose the 10 pounds.
Try to fit into the dress or a suit.
It's the kind of thing that you should be, you know, budgeting your time over the course of the 3 or 4 months leading up to the big day that you're going to wear this special outfit. but you know what? I think human nature is to put off.
It's true.
What you don't think you need, or anyway, it seems like it's so far in the future, you might not need it. Why take the time today? But anyway, I really liked, I liked this approach where he's recommending, you know, because this is human nature, we need to be reminding students that these learning center supports, tools, training, they're there for you. They're not for a certain type of student. They're for all students.
Right.
So the third one was recognize the importance of faculty. And this, he mentions, faculty mentoring and mindset matter. It's essential that faculty convey certain messages, that your students are fully capable of success in your class, and that your goal as a teacher is to bring all students to at least a minimal level of competency. And the thing that struck me about this, as I was reading this, I was reminded of a recent research study done by Indiana University. It was published, or I read about it, in February of this year, 2019, that looked at STEM students, and especially underrepresented minorities, and they looked at the outcomes of those students in relation to the mindset of their professors. And they found that professors that had a fixed mindset about their students believe their students can't change their intelligence, and as a result they're sending messages to students that only innately gifted students can succeed in class.
Right.
Whereas the professors with growth mindsets believe that students can change their intelligence, and as a result, they were sending messages to their students that there are strategies that the students can use to succeed in class.
Mm-hmm.
The end result of this was, for those growth mindset classes, students were more highly motivated. All students received better grades, but especially there was a smaller racial achievement gap for students in the growth mindset professor classes compared to students who took classes taught by fixed mindset professors.
Right, right. That's fascinating. This is one of those areas where it's kind of a tough nut to crack, I think. I'm just thinking about some of the strategic consulting engagements that we've been on, and some in particular where we've often do focus groups with faculty. And some faculty, you can see the fixed mindset in some of them, right? There are obviously many, many faculty who really adore their students and really work hard for them. And I think most faculty believe that they're doing the right thing for their students, for sure. and are in the business for that purpose. But some of them also think, well, you know, if this person can't hack it in my class, maybe it's good that we learned now, right?
Early.
And, you know, they can go find another pathway, or maybe they don't belong in this college if they can't pass my English 101 class or something like that. And so I don't know where I read it, if it was in this article or not, where he said essentially helping all students. If all students are slipping through, or many students are slipping through the cracks, it's really the fault of the institution. If one slips through the cracks, maybe, you know, maybe that's an issue for the student. But if many are, then we might have a bigger problem.
So that's actually getting to number four.
Okay.
Realize that
I'm jumping the gun.
You are, because it's exciting. Realize that course design can make a big difference. And the quote I think you're looking for from this blog post is, from Stephen Mintz, "I've long believed that if one student fails, that may well be the student's problem. But if many slip through the cracks, that's my problem."
Right.
I like that quote.
Yes, that was a good one. And I think more faculty, more of us, and I mean, I almost want to write that one down and bring that forward to our clients when we're talking about it, when issues like this kind of come up.
And what he's suggesting here in this fourth item is that build your course in such a way that you're instrumenting it with early diagnostics so that you and your students know where their knowledge gaps are. You can't wait until the midterm to find this stuff out. I think most people know that. There are other ways to teach things, like doing collaborative learning as opposed to lecturing and droning on for hours on end.
So using different kinds of methods to incorporate different learning styles and, you know, any different kinds of students and how they think about things and how they learn.
And making sure that the assignments that you're providing are authentic in terms of the way they mimic what happens in the professional world of that discipline. Rather than things that feel artificial and kind of busy work.
This is a case where you often hear faculty as well say, you know, look, this is how I teach my course. And, you know, this is the way it works and how I find it best to convey the information and so on and so forth. But that's sort of a faculty-centric mindset around it, as opposed to, well, how do I make sure that all of my students have some minimum level of competency in here, and that to the best I can help them all succeed. You don't have to change the standards that you set for yourself and for your students, but you can change the methods. And so just examining your current, what do you call it? The curriculum, the
syllabus.
Yes. I lost the term, the syllabus, and saying, okay, wait a minute. Is there a way to break this up a little bit? So it's not all heavily weighted at the end and then it's too late to discover a deficiency in one of my students and that I can help them and, or refer them somewhere. Lots I think that can be done there. Maybe difficult to do across the board.
Well, so that's exactly where I was going in terms of, I think, item five that is not in this
blog
post. And that is, I love these four items, but they're not scalable in a way that gives a consistent student experience or chance of succeeding across the entire institution. His points, I think, are valid and great, but they really rely on an individual faculty member saying, I'm going to look at the course design.
Right.
I'm going to see if I can weave in these supports into my class. And that's great if you're the student who happens to register, you know,
for
section 47 of your gen ed, you know, math, and you get that professor. But odds are you're going to get many of these early, you know, first couple of years classes have large numbers of sections, lots of students, and they're taught by adjuncts who may be new to that institution, who aren't familiar with best practices around teaching.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on how to scale this?
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. Let's talk a little bit about that, because I'm thinking here, especially in these faculty-centric two items, number three and four here, the fact that we often have a Center for Teaching and Learning, right? Mm-hmm. There's a department at most institutions that's dedicated to bolstering the methods that their faculty are using on campus, that this should be potentially an initiative that's run out of that department that would look at how do I educate the faculty to do some of this on their own, and then potentially look to see if there are some specific courses and or departments where the data tells us that students are falling out more rapidly, or there's maybe erratic noise within the data where many students are succeeding but others are not in certain sections of the courses.
Right.
And how do we drill into that and do it in an effective manner?
Yeah, so for example, if you looked at that set of gen ed classes for math, college algebra, and the 57 sections that are taught each term, and you look at the standard deviation of outcomes, you know, we've seen in our data, in our clients' data, there can be an astounding range of success rates for what should, in theory, be the same exact course material and a random selection of students.
Right.
And it
the
data
the
tell us it's all over the map, and it really matters who your instructor is in terms of your odds of succeeding.
Right.
So I think any initiative that a Center for Teaching and Learning could do to identify those courses and begin to explore, okay, how do we reduce the variability in student outcome?
And this is especially important in areas where lots of adjuncts, community colleges often have many adjunct faculty and professors. They're coming in for the first time, mm-hmm. teaching particular courses. Super important to at least, you know, have some standards around how to deliver so that students can be most successful.
Yeah.
Okay, what about on the student side of the house here? Do we have some scaling suggestions here? One thought I had around working on the student's mindset and, you know, going back to my example with my daughter sometimes struggling and not quite realizing that she should go to get some help, is often, and maybe this will address the, you know, the idea that students think that they must be dumb if they have to go and use the mm-hmm. service, that perhaps, you know, colleges have all these posters on the wall all the time promoting so many different services and offerings that they have. But I'm struck by the fact that I don't really see too many that are almost testimonials in nature, where it exhibits a specific student and ranges of students, students that are struggling to students that are on the higher end, who maybe, you know, are getting B's and they move to an A and let's tell that story, or they're really good at their work, but they realize they could become more efficient, mm-hmm. and struggling students, right? And having examples of all of them, real life examples with their real quotes, their photo on the wall, and just different ways of promoting these kinds of services so they're just not used only at the end of the semester or only when you're on academic probation.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So having institutions get a little more creative about connecting with the students in general,
yes.
about the services that are available, whether
yes.
it's coming up with a testimonial-based approach, leveraging text messaging, or whatever the latest app is mm-hmm. these days. It's hard to keep up.
Yeah.
But yeah, those are some ideas to try.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts?
I think we covered it, Jan.
Yeah, this was good.
Yeah.
Thanks for spending time with me to talk about it.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcasting service. Also, show notes can be found on our website at studentsuccesshe.com. And if you have questions or thoughts to share, please leave us a comment on our website, Facebook, or Twitter at Student Success HE. Until next time.